The Tom Woods Show, episode 2190.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. We all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm very delighted to be joined today by not quite an old friend, more or less a newer friend, and that is the great magician Doc Dixon. And notice, I have not described him as a libertarian magician. And the reason is, when somebody is introduced as a libertarian musician or a libertarian movie maker, I'm not entirely sure about their music or their movies, frankly. This guy is a great magician who happens to be a libertarian. That's how it should be. You be your thing and be great at your thing first. And then whatever else you have on the ideological side either can come through or doesn't have to in the work you do. Just be good at your thing. And my goodness, Doc Dixon is good. I've had him on the show before because he fooled Penn and Teller on their excellent television program, Fool Us. We talked about that. But then since then, Doc has done a few interesting things in the Tom Woods universe. For one thing, as a supporting listener of the Tom Woods Show, you get invited to my parties. Now, so if Doc, I'm sorry, it's a long introduction, but I got to give it. So
Tom, you're just saying really great things about me.
Yeah, so feel free to just sit and bask in it.
The whole episode could be this as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so, you know, I offer some things to people who support the show, right? You support the show, you get into my private group, which that alone is worth the whole thing. But I've got transcripts of the interviews, and I've got free this and free that, and this benefit and that benefit, and I'll do this for you and that for you. It's an embarrassment of riches when you go to supportinglisteners.com. But one of the unannounced bonuses is you get invited to my parties, which I have on a regular basis. Now, I'm not having a fall party this year just because, you know, we had the wedding and then I held a conference 2 weeks later for my School of Life people in Orlando. And that's about as much planning as I feel like doing. But we'll resume them in 2023. You want to be on the list so you get invited to these parties. Anyway, so Doc has performed at a couple of my parties. First, the party was really big, and for magic to work, he needs a certain setup. So I ended up renting in our little development here. We have a golf course, and we have a pro shop, and then attached to that, there's an event space that I rented so that Doc could put on a show, and it was just tremendous. Everybody absolutely loved it, was blown away. But then after that, Doc somehow managed to weasel his way into a second Woods party by saying, look, what I really specialize in is close-up magic. So maybe I could do a series of small group shows. I said, oh, okay, fine. So we took one of the rooms in my house. We got most of the furniture out. We put a round table in there and some folding chairs that I rented from a party place. And everybody's name tag had a letter A, B, C, D, or E on it. And so I would call all the A's and it would be their turn to go up to that room and have Doc's show. And then all the B's and C's and so on and on. And that was even better. And I remember one attendee said, all right, this time I thought, since I'm sitting right next to him, I got to be able to catch him in something. And I still couldn't. If anything, it was even harder to understand how he was doing what he was doing. And then, of course, the culmination, I mean, even though it came first, was the 2000th episode. Doc sawed me in half. And if you haven't seen that, I'll link to that video on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2190. So Doc's been a magician for, I don't know, 11 zillion years. We'll get into the details with him in a minute. Yeah. But he's really, really, really good. Okay. And again, I even know a handful of people who thought, oh, he's a libertarian magician. So that means he'll be a fourth-rate magician with some bad jokes. He is a first-rate magician with some mediocre jokes. That's who Doc Dixon is. Doc, welcome.
The show just jumped the shark just then. You were doing so well. Whatever. Let's move on.
All right.
You know, I was about to compliment you on your party planning skills, but you can just kiss those compliments goodbye. I don't think this is that widely known. how I ended up sawing you in half. When I heard about the 2000, I thought, you know, and I don't think I'd even done a show for you yet at that point. I emailed you and I didn't even put it in the body of the email. I put it in the subject line. Do you want to be sawn in half at the 2000? And if you remember, I got a response back in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
All caps, definitely yes, 6 exclamation points. So I was stoked about that. Though later I found out that wasn't you responding. That was your then girlfriend, now wife, Jenna. And she didn't even know I was a magician. So
that's a good one. That is indeed a good one. But I remember I asked you
if she wanted two Toms or if she thought, well, you know, in case this doesn't work out, you know. Well,
just so everybody knows, in case you didn't see it, this isn't the customary thing where the person gets sawed in half and the two pieces are split apart and, you know, the person is obviously squished into one of the two pieces. It wasn't that. But I didn't know what it was going to be. So I remember asking you, when this trick is done, will I, as the major participant in it, will I have some inkling of how it's done? And you said, maybe you'll have a hint of how it's done. But I'm happy to say that I'm enough of an adult that I still don't know how you did it.
And yes, a long list of Ivy League, Harvard, Columbia adults. Yes, that's... Yeah.
Well, listen, there are a lot of those. Let's face it. Well, as we've seen over the last however many years, right?
Well, yeah, they're out there. They're out there. But you are not amongst those dolts.
I appreciate that. Well, you know,
darn it, I'm just that good, darn it.
You know, you mentioned parties. And I want to say a quick thing about this. I sometimes like to watch some old TV shows. There are three particular old TV shows that I like. One is What's My Line? One is I've Got a Secret, and one is To Tell the Truth. And I can't remember which one of those three, but one of those three had, it might have been What's My Line as the celebrity guest, and I can't think of her name. It starts with an E. In the 50s and 60s, she was known across the country among the elite classes as the best party thrower ever. And she threw all kinds of parties, and she threw thousands of them. And she knew everybody. She knew royalty. She knew actors. She knew scholars. She knew everybody. And I cannot think what her name was. And I started to read her book, and it's called something like How I Did It, or How I Do It, or How to Do It, or something like that, about entertaining. And she's describing, you know, how to be a good host and how to throw a good party and how to make it memorable. The problem is she gives no examples of parties that have 100 plus people at them like mine. So she's saying, well, you know, make sure everybody at your dinner table, well, look, you know, I don't have a 100 person long dinner table. So I'm looking for suggestions, party suggestions, you know, to have themes or to do something unusual that people aren't expecting for a party of this size. So if there are any entertainers out there who have ideas for me on this front, because I realized halfway through this book, this woman isn't going to give me a single idea, then feel free to send them to me. Go to tomwoods.com and click contact, and I get that just like an email. I really would benefit from that. All right. Now that we've had the longest lead-in of any... including the Gene Epstein episodes.
Great introduction, and now you're on your broadcast chumming for other entertainers.
Yes, indeed. Well, because look, I can't
this
just
is the worst podcast I've ever been.
I can't promise magic at every single party unless you want to enter into some kind of an agreement.
Okay, non-magic entertainers. There you go.
All right. Okay.
And also, you want event planners. In all seriousness, that's the thing you want.
Well, an event planner, because an event planner is sort of the guy who calls up the hotel and says, we're putting on an event, we want to block out some rooms and get some conference space. I need a creative, you know, to come up with, because, you know, after COVID, with COVID going on, so let me just tell people the history of this thing. The COVID thing was what gave me the idea to hold parties at my house because it was not allowed. In Florida, it was allowed. But for most people in the country, they couldn't hold a party with this many people. And I just said, well, we're doing it because this whole thing is inhumane and stupid and useless, and people need to get out of their houses and do something. And so I had people flying in from around the country to come to that party. So that was initially why I did it. So all I needed to do at that party was just stand there. Because because just being in a house with people and food was incredible for people. Then I realized, okay, maybe I need a little bit of entertainment. So I brought Eric July to be at one of my parties. And that was tremendous. And Eric was such a champ. He socialized with people for 5 solid hours. He just couldn't have been better.
Eric's a great guy.
Yeah. And then I brought you and whatever. But beyond just having an entertainer, I'm just thinking about ideas, creative things that I can do. So that's the thing. Because yeah, it's fun to go to Woods' house and stand around and drink and eat and chit-chat. But can Woods deliver? Can Woods go to the next level is the question we're asking here. But it's not a question that we have to resolve right now. We really should be talking about the great Doc Dixon. So let's go ahead and do that. I want to resist the temptation to spend the episode talking about magic with you, even though that is what I want to do more than anything. We did do that in the previous episode, so I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/2190. But I know you want to talk about something a little bit different and that may be more, I guess, appropriate to the Tom Woods Show, because maybe not everybody, for whatever reason, not everybody would be a magic fan. I can't understand why.
Now you're talking sense. I can't understand why. I have to tell you, when you're talking about themes, we'll get to the point in a second. I get calls for a lot of different themes. Hey, can you work in this theme? I got a call from a client, from a prospect about to become a client, wanted me for an event. And they found me because they saw me on Penn & Teller Fool Us when I fooled Penn & Teller. And they were binge-watching the shows, you know, and found me and say, hey, I like this guy, called me. And they're hosting a Western theme, and they thought my waxed mustache would really fit in.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay.
Oh, my. Yes.
Every part of me must do the job of booking shows with all the kids I have. And even the mustache is pulling its weight.
That is great. My beard hasn't done me a darn thing.
Well, I'm sure it will.
Anyway, so we will give the skeletal background, though, about your career. You have the nickname Doc, because your name is actually Chris Dixon, but I've never called you Chris, and I never will. I'm going to call you Doc till the day I die. But that's because of a career you had before magic.
Yeah, I was an EMT in high school, emergency medical technician, from about 16 to 19. And, you know, a kid doing that kind of sticks out a little than most, you know, the fact of someone doing that. And so it got me the nickname.
Okay. I think it works professionally. Obviously, you wouldn't be using it if it didn't. And then how do you go from a guy who's good at magic to a guy who does magic for a living?
Oh, you know, in the simplest terms, the same way you're a guy who mows his own lawns to a guy who does landscaping on other people's lawns. You find people that have needs for what you do. And admittedly, it's probably a little harder to ferret that out as a magician because compared to, you know, landscaping. And you approach those people with your ability to satisfy their needs. That's it. I mean, it's sales.
But do you have to call up theaters or do you have a booking person who does that? And, you know, how do they know you're any good? You know, you could just be some guy who used to mow lawns to you know, use the analogy. How do they know you're any good that they would want to book you?
Social proof. Fool Us was a big help with that. People in the business who, you know, familiar with the show, that's a whole lot of street cred there. And all the other clients I've had over the years, you know, that's what clients tend to look for. They want to see your video. They want to see, you know, who you've worked for. And some of it, you know, either it's me or someone who I would employ, it's the matter of shaking the weeds. I mean, I'm booking in 2023 a number of theater shows. And that's just a matter of finding the booker at the theater and sending them the promo kit. It's a lot easier than it used to be back in the day, because back in the day, the promo kit was a promo kit. You had to put a stamp on it. It's in a folder, photos, a DVD. Oh, geez. Now, links, much easier than it was.
Yeah, that is much easier. So this is the last thing I'll say about this, and we'll transition into more libertarian stuff. But is the way it works that you and the theater agree that regardless of what happens, you get a flat fee, and anything over and above that from the ticket sales goes to the venue? Or do you split a percentage of the seat cost? Or how does it work?
There is no one way, and there's different types of arrangements. And of course, it'll vary with who the performer is, where they are in show business. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for decades, but obviously, say, you know, comedian Bill Burr, or pick your famous comedian, is not only in the numbers, the amount of money, but not doing the same deal structure that I would. So it just varies.
Okay. All right. Just wondering. Okay. So you're also a libertarian.
Consider performing, aren't you? That's why you're asking these questions.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I only wish I had the ability to do it. It's the kind of thing that I've always been drawn to. I've always found fascinating, but the investment of time that's involved to become any good, that's a great deterrent. I mean, that's great for you. Otherwise, the whole world could do it.
I had years ago related to that. I remember quoting a fee to a client. I was doing close-up magic at a cocktail party. And the client said to me, "Wow, that's more than my lawyer charges." And I said, "Well, you know, if money's the thing, then just hire him to walk around the party and do legal briefs."
Yeah, there you go. That's right. All right. So now that I know you, I mean, I guess we got to know each other in 2019. That's when I first interviewed you. So I knew I knew about you then. And of course, I watched your Fool Us thing, and we even featured the whole video. We showed it at the 2000th episode. I've gotten to know you on social media. And not only are you a libertarian, but you're just like 100% in the same camp of libertarians that I'm in and that these people listening to us are in. So I don't know how we wound up getting somebody as great and talented as you. But anyway, I don't mean to flatter you on that, although I've been doing that for about 20 minutes now. How did you stumble upon our, let's say, interesting set of ideas?
As a teenager, I was bitten by a radioactive Murray Rothbard. No, that's not it?
No.
Okay. I was exposed to Ludwig von Mises' gamma radiation. No. Same story as most of us, Ron Paul. Little tweak for me in that shortly before that, I began looking into buying some gold, and that opened the door to learning about, you know, what fiat money is. And then that segued into the Ron Paul revolution.
Ah, okay.
So pretty boilerplate.
Yeah, yeah. Now, at the same time, do you own libertarianmagician.com?
Yes. Yes, I do. I got that after I did the first event for you, and I saw these folks there, and I go, "Oh, I got to do this." Now, currently, I forget the technical term, but it goes right to docdixon.com.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's where that'll be. That will not always be the case. That will be a site just designed for that eventually, but you know.
You don't think magic is an area where unpopular ideas are going to cause problems for you professionally?
No, because I try not to express unpopular ideas in unpopular ways. I mean, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and I think most of what I post there is, you know, it agrees with my libertarian views when it touches on that topic, but I'm not posting it in a way that is slapping somebody upside the head, for lack of a better way to put it, in an aggressive way. That's, in general, not my demeanor. You know, I have issues, I think, as a libertarian should. You know, I'm not a fan of Biden. I'm not a fan of Trump. And I find that's a happy place to be in, putting it in that way to people that are non-libertarians. It kind of keeps their cackles down a little. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I hear that.
I mean, it's almost like when I was a kid, I remember my dad talking with his buddies about politics, and so many of the discussions would end with, they're all crooks.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of libertarian in that worldview.
Right. And there is still, despite how polarizing Trump is, there is still a constituency out there that feels that way about the whole crew of them that you can appeal to. So you kind of become a little bit more public as a libertarian. I mean, you had been in the background, but now it's too late, man. You've dipped more than just your toe in it. So talk to me about this.
Yeah, I basically went from being a libertarian in worldview and thought and opinion and practice, as much as one can practice, to being a libertarian in community. You don't have to appear at that many Tom Woods events for your Facebook friend request box to get filled up rather quickly. And so that expanded a lot of that. And it's interesting to be in that community, or in our community, more accurately put, and bringing a little bit of the, as you said, as an entertainer, you know, I have kids to feed, a wife to feed, and I eat too. And so I like to be a little more deliberate about what I post in that regard. And some of it, and I want to put a heavy qualifier in front of this, you know, I'm a newbie here. I'm talking, you know, to the, what's the term? One of the OGs, that would be you. Is that the term, OG, I think?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I like that term, OG, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, and so there's a certain wariness I have about having hubris and having opinions that are beyond my reach. But it seems that so much of our universe, our libertarian world, especially online where so much of us live, we're preaching to the choir. And what we preach to the choir isn't necessarily going to bring people through the gates. Most of us, many of us, I mean, how many times we've heard, I came through via the Ron Paul revolution. It's not almost a cliche. It is a cliche statement. And yet, what was Ron Paul saying that brought us in was simple to understand. I mean, at least initially, we got it up front. We understood it. It just wasn't repeating taxation as theft ad nauseum. We got that. We don't disagree with that. But sometimes I don't think that's the way to bring people in.
Sometimes,
does that make sense?
Yeah, but sometimes when you're on social media, you're just screwing around. I mean, you're not even thinking, I hope a billion people see this and change their minds. You're just having some fun.
I get that totally. I mean, you see the stuff I post. Yes, I get that totally. But sometimes it feels like this. If a guy goes out on a first date and he asks the girl to marry him, that first date, whoa, too strong, baby steps. And I think that I would like to see a better pedagogy used in libertarianism.
Give me an example. What should we do other than asking for marriage on the first date?
Okay, metaphorically speaking,
right,
I hope.
Yes.
I say, look at what Ron Paul did. One of my favorite moments in the debates was when the subject of drug legalization came up. And in an incredibly pithy, funny way, he was asked, you know, he answered, listen, if we legalize heroin tomorrow, is everyone going to use heroin? How many people here would use heroin if it were legal? And the response was cheers and laughter. Because in one sentence, he just nailed that maybe the government isn't the best way to deal with drugs. Now, just to be clear, I am not pro-heroin. If I could, no stars. If it was an Amazon review. But I don't think the government is the best way to deal with drugs. To get off on this tangent, man, I look at Rush Limbaugh, who was drug addicted a few years before he died. Was it OxyContin?
I don't remember, but I know that was the case.
Yeah, and he, because of the legality of it, while he was seeking treatment, he had to jump through a ton of legal hoops to avoid jail time. What if those legal hoops weren't there? He would have been able to get his treatment much quicker, much faster, much more efficiently if he didn't have to be so terrified of going to jail.
I think there are numerous cases of this, especially younger people. Something terrible is happening. Maybe an overdose is taking place, but nobody wants to get in trouble, so they don't know if they should call the authorities or not. And I wonder if that may also have been the case with that, this was many years ago, but the basketball player, he had just been acquired by the Boston Celtics, Len Bias. This might have been all the way back in
that.
The 80s. I think he had the same thing. I think he died of an overdose, and it was a situation where if we'd had a more humane system, he could have been helped, but nobody wanted to pull the trigger on it, so to speak.
And I think that that situation, particularly Rush, who is such a GOP conservative icon, I think using that is a great argument to the GOP / conservative people who are wary of libertarianism just for that reason, just for the drug issue. They hear that, well, that's tough to argue against.
Yeah, that's right. Well, either way, here's how I think about it. I mean, I kind of like Scott Horton's thing about we attack the right from the right and the left from the left. Like, so we make the left feel like they're not living up to their stated principles. And the same thing with the right. So if I come across somebody who's kind of skeptical of people who want to talk about the Federal Reserve, I say, well, you know, I'm a real believer in the free market economy. And so therefore, I don't think there should be a group of people trying to make some kind of macroeconomic plan based on setting interest rates where they think they belong. That doesn't sound like the free market to me. So, well, that has to make somebody stop and think, at least on the surface of it, that does sound like something I'm supposed to believe too.
And I just wish we were able to meet people more where they are. And maybe that's going on. And it, no doubt it is. It's just that online, you know, now I'm so neck deep in the libertarian world that I'm not seeing it as much. And I wonder, is it because I'm neck deep in it, or is it because there just needs to be more of a meeting them where they are approach? Another example that comes to mind, just reading the other day, many Christians have problems with libertarianism. And I've dealt with it personally this way in talking to others. As I've asked other Christians, what laws should we have against heresy? And that question, once someone admits that there shouldn't be laws against heresy, then they're admitting that the government is not the be-all and end-all as far as tools to deal with right and wrong. And I think that's a door opener for someone coming from the Christian worldview for the libertarian view, because it gets them to see, well, you're just not using the right tool for the job. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So now you've gone from being a guy who was personally a libertarian, but I don't think people realized you were a libertarian, or you hadn't made that public, or you hadn't really stepped into the libertarian world. Like, you didn't go around to Libertarian Party conventions or conferences doing magic for people. So we were not aware of you. And now that you've gotten to a point where there is a decent number of us aware of you and who like you. And I want to see more people indeed invite you to their events. DocDixon.com is the website, remember, because you're great. And what an unusual thing. I mean, you can only have so many speakers talking about the non-aggression principle. You got to all work and no play, right? You got to have some entertainment too. And you're excellent at that. But I don't know. I mean, what is it like all of a sudden, not everybody, but an awful lot of people know who Doc Dixon is in our circle specifically?
It was an incredibly fun and, for lack of a better word, efficient way to make a lot of new friends. Even though I'm a grown man, a dad, a husband, grandfather, I've not outgrown the joy of, hey, I got a bunch of new friends now. And not only new friends, but like-minded friends. So that was the biggest part of it. And yeah, I would say that's what it's like to see that world. And just very pleased to be in that.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you because, as I say, sometimes we have there'll be a few libertarians, let's say, who are movie stars or something, but they're in such a different universe that we never see them. They don't come, like, Vince Vaughn isn't going to come to some libertarian event with 200 people at it. That'll never happen. You know, so we do have a few people placed here and there. We just don't ever interact with them. But you're drawn from the entertainment world, and we can actually see you because you deign to join us from time to time.
Deign.
It's a good word. Fits in a lot.
Deign. I
just used that word the other day in my newsletter. I said, guess what YouTube now deigns to allow us to say? It's that apparently YouTube has like a guidance sheet. Tim Pool shared it. You know, you can't say ivermectin does any good and you can't do this or they're going to take you down. And it used to be you can't question the efficacy of masks. Then their recent update, they quietly dropped not being able to question the efficacy of masks, which maybe because it's obviously the biggest public health flop the past 100 years. But so now they have deigned to allow us to say, I'm not saying I necessarily want to test out this theory right now, but I'm just telling you, it's a great use of the word deign.
Obviously, our overlords have grasped the fact that the internet, unlike printed on paper rules, allows you to change the rules very quickly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. And quietly. And quite, I mean, almost like in Animal Farm, you know, the animals would look up and say, you know, I'm pretty sure there was a rule here up there. And then they look it up there and it's been that no animal shall sleep in a bed with sheets. Huh, that's funny. I didn't remember those last two words last time I looked up there, right?
Soon we'll go to YouTube and the subtitle will be, all videos are equal.
Yes, but some videos are more equal than others, right?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, folks, it's time to take just a minute for Woods to improve your life yet again. Have you lost count by now? For 3 years, I have been a happy customer of Happily Date Boxes. Every month, you get a box in the mail with a different theme for a date that you can enjoy in the comfort of your own home. And it gives you an opportunity to spend quality time with your significant other, even with your busy schedule. Just within the past week, my wife and I enjoyed the most recent of these, and this one had a morning theme, so it came with coffee. It came with the ingredients to make crepes, which we did together. As always, it comes with a curated custom date playlist, which we use on Spotify, a series of conversation starters, which we always enjoy, and then it included this time a game we played where we had to write down our answers to different questions about ourselves and then try to anticipate what the other person's answers were, which is hilarious, by the way. And then there was a bunch of other fun stuff, trivia, crossword puzzle, Mad Libs, other boxes we've done, crafts. We've done an exercise where they say you're on a desert island and here are 10 possible things that you might have in your possession. Rank them in order of how useful they would actually be to you. Very interesting and fun stuff. And if you are the one who comes up with the idea, your significant other is going to think you are absolutely amazing and you do not have to say, Woods told me to do this. You just say, I just happen to be a really, really thoughtful person. Well, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. That's 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. I'm sorry, I can't help it. I just have to say a few things about magic itself. There's an event in New York City that I have enjoyed for years. I mean, I think I first took my kids to it back in 2017, and I'd been going to it even longer than that. And it's called Monday Night Magic, and it's down in the Village. And every Monday night, you can just Google Monday Night, Google's just an old expression. If you prefer another search engine, I completely understand why. Just type in Monday Night Magic, and you can go. It's a different show every week because New York being New York, it attracts a lot of traveling entertainers. And whoever happens to be in town that week can go and perform at Monday Night Magic. So you never see the same show twice. And so I am always grabbing the opportunity to see new magicians. And in particular, there are times when if I know the secret to a trick, it can kind of spoil it. But there are other times, particularly with close-up sleight-of-hand magic, where if I know how it's done, it can actually make the trick even more impressive. Like there's that one, I told you about this, but you know the one where the magician is holding a number of playing cards in his hand, in the palm of his hand, and so that you can see the cards. And then he passes the other palm in front of those cards ever so briefly, and when that hand is removed, the card has changed. The card that was facing us has changed. It looks like it is instantaneous and without any effort on the magician's part. But now that I kind of do know what the magician has to be doing in order for that nine of clubs to become the king of diamonds in an instant without looking like he's done anything, now that I know how that's done, I am more impressed by it. I don't know how you people do. In fact, I remember I said, of all the tricks you do, I wish I knew this one where I just name a card in the deck. I didn't pick it and put it back in. Maybe you know where it is. I just name a card and you produce it. And I said, I really, of all your tricks, that's the one I would most want to know how to do. And you said, the thing about that trick is I could explain it to you. I could tell you how it's done in no time at all. But it would take you decades to actually be able to do it. And I just love that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That is a favorite trick, and it's actually a signature piece for me. Yeah, it's, as they say in Boston, it's wicked hard. Yeah, tons of hours. A little bit of trivia. If I understand the description of the first thing you talked about when the card changes,
yeah,
that move was invented by Harry Houdini.
Was it really?
If the move I'm guessing you're thinking of is the one I'm thinking of, yes, it was invented by Houdini. Houdini, before he was an escape act, he also went by the King of Cards. And so he did a lot of card things, and he invented that move. It's
that move is so hard that it's almost like, unless you were a mad genius or something, you wouldn't even think of inventing it because you would think, oh, that can't be done. What would be the point of spending years trying to master a technique that is literally impossible? So even to be able to have the vision to see that this could be done is impressive.
Well, I don't know about the genius part, but the mad part is definitely there in a lot of magic. The particularly sleight of hand magic, the fascination with just making it that little bit better. If I move my one finger over this way, what will happen? What will this look like? And there are sleight of hand moves that you could see two of them, and I know them to be two different things. You would look at it and think it's the same thing until I said, yeah, Tom, but look at this. See the little difference with that? I'm like, oh, it's just the nature of it. Magic rarely gets better by a leap or a bound. It gets better incrementally, especially sleight of hand magic gets better incrementally. Little touches here and there. Like non-magicians think of dealing from the bottom of the deck, the bottom deal, is that's that one thing. There's literally dozens of methods with little incremental differences between them, some vastly better than others.
Well, my impression is that the average magician who's, let's say, a non-celebrity, so not a David Copperfield, not a Chris Angel, just a good magician, but that the country doesn't know as a household name, that kind of magician has gotten much, much better in the past 30 years, 40 than before. And I believe that to be true. Now, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I saw an example of this, again, on one of those old TV shows. One of the people turned out to be a magician and so did a quick impromptu magic show for the audience. And this was, again, like from the 1950s. And it was so utterly unimpressive compared to what we see from Doc Dixon that we were actually almost chuckling at how amazed the audience seemed to be when it was just so cheesy and awful. I mean, I go to Doc Dixon and these people would have to be carried out on stretchers if they saw your show, if they were impressed by that. So do you think I'm right?
Yes, I do. Some of it is the accumulation of those incremental changes. Things get better. Some of it are aesthetic changes. You look at old magic books and you'll see these pedestal tables heavily draped and, you know, you can hide a flock of chickens in the thing. You can't do that. You can't do that nowadays. I mean, if you look at, you're talking about sawing someone in half, the original method for that created by a performer, P.T. Selbit, if you look at the box the person was put in, holy moly, it was just enormous. It packed theaters. It was an incredibly big deal. But you look at it today, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
this fooled people? I mean, there's an old joke about Houdini when he did his magic show and he vanished an elephant at the end of it. And what it looked like to the audience was this box was brought in. The elephant went inside the box. The drape on the front of the box was closed. He clapped his hands or whatever. Opened the drape and the audience looked through it to the back of the box where there was also a drape and finger quotes here, the elephant was gone. And then the box was pushed off. Well, the joke is four guys brought the box on. The elephant goes in, bam, bam, bam. The drapes are open. The elephant's gone. And then 20 guys pushed the box off.
Yeah.
The reality of it, you know.
That's one heavy box.
It's the moisture in the air. You know, the box gets heavier, the wood. Most magic historians that I've read says, yeah, it was a bit of a lackluster trick. But in true show business fashion, it put butts in seats.
Yeah.
And so even a lackluster trick was worth doing it. Now you see that, well, shoot, even not now. Back in the 70s when Doug Henning did his version on live TV, it looked great. Siegfried and Roy, their version of it, holy smoke, was spectacular. But it's got better. Yeah, it's got better. And even sleight of hand, the internet spreads knowledge like crazy. I mean, back when I was coming up.
It spreads knowledge and it increases audience expectations because they've seen what's possible.
Yes, 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 yes. And hopefully those are still kind of tracking each other a bit. But back when I was coming up, there were certain things, if you wanted to learn, it kind of amounted to helps if you know somebody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This knowledge wasn't freely out there, or maybe it was just located in, you know, one or two hard to find books. Now, if you want to learn how to do something, it's a matter of will, not a matter of, you know, finding out how to do it, not a matter of how.
You know, I'm going to wrap up with this. As you know, I recently turned 50, and I appreciate, by the way, my wife did a private roast where she gathered some roasts of me from some of my friends like you and Angela McArdle and Jeff Dice and a few other people. And she had somebody stitch them together into a very, very entertaining roast of me. So anyway, I recently turned 50, and I know you're aware of that. And I've become very, very philosophical after 50, very philosophical. And I guess one of the things that kind of bums me out at being 50 is the full realization of the limitations that we all have, that even in an entire human lifetime, you can truly master really only a handful of things, if not just one or two things. You know, I'd love to be as good as you are at magic, and I'd love to be as great a musician as some of the musicians I like. And I realized that all these things I would have had to devote my whole life to, you know, even to be on the same stage as somebody like that. And even then, I might not have been able to do it. I wish these constraints didn't exist, you know, that I could be, that I could fully enjoy on the same level as a true artist, all these different things. But, you know, the thing I picked was libertarianism, which is fine, right? It's great. It's about justice in the world, and I thoroughly believe in it. But then I look at other people who do all these amazing things. I thought, darn, I wish I could do that too. But such are the limitations on human beings. You know, you can't be a master of everything.
You know, I would go beyond that and say more than libertarianism, and I think this would relate to your school for life, you've managed how to make libertarianism work. Your podcast works, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, but this is just what's obvious to me. Your podcast works really well. I think I said this once to you over dinner. One of the things I think is so good about your podcast and you as host is that, much like Johnny Carson, he was interested in everything, or he could fake it.
Yeah, and he was great at that. Yeah, he was great as an interviewer.
That's what you are. And that's not, quote, libertarianism, close quote, you know, or libertarianism per se. It's just that skill as a broadcaster. So you're bringing that.
I appreciate that. And I would hope that at least in this area where I've had almost 2,200 episodes, I hope I've been able to have engaging conversations on a wide variety of topics from a position of at least a reasonable level of knowledge with each guest. And even here, now obviously with magic, I know you know everything inside and out, you know all the names, but I at least know some names because I've been, you know, I used to watch Mark Wilson.
Holy smoke!
On Saturday mornings. Yeah.
Wow!
And his son, who is probably like 80 now, you know, but Probably not that old. I mean, he looked like he was about 12 in, let's say, the late 70s, early 80s. So he's probably still kicking.
Well, did you see his son on Fool Us?
Doggone it, I did not.
It's online. He did an illusion trick, meaning a large box type of trick. And at the end, his mom and dad came out of the box.
Oh, that's all right. I'm going to go look for that. All right.
Oh,
all right.
I will tell you, I'm not ashamed to say, as a magician, if you can watch that, you don't get a big lump in your throat, something's wrong. It was wonderful. And Penn jumped to his feet. I believe both Penn and Teller did, clapping and cheering. And I mean, you remember Mark Wilson and his wife, Nanny Darnell, as a child. Well, they certainly do. Stood up on their feet, and you can see the video, but if I remember correctly, what he said was, "You made legend Mark Wilson and Nanny Darnell appear. Guaranteed that's a fooler." It was just wonderful.
That is fantastic. I am going to go seek that out. Absolutely. Well, we're going to have some good links up at tomwoods.com/2190, including the song in half routine. But remember, Doc's specialty is that close-up stuff, and doggone it, he's so great at it. So also check out, which I will also be linking to, docdixon.com. To follow him, and even to consider, you know, we talked about parties and entertainment. Nobody expects you to have a magic show at your house, okay? Absolutely nobody. Or for your corporate event, that's much more common. But if you really want to blow people away, you could have a magician at your house. No one will ever forget that. They'll say, this guy's from like another planet or something. How did he arrange that? You can book Doc also. Contact him through docdixon.com. Doc, I'm going to let you go, but thanks so much for talking to me today.
As always, my pleasure. Great to chat, Tom.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow, Gene Epstein joins us once again. We're going to be talking about the student loan forgiveness issue. We'll talk about the economics of it and other considerations, moral considerations involved. If you like and appreciate the Tom Woods Show, I mentioned one of the unannounced benefits you get as a supporter of the show. You get many announced benefits as well. So go check out those announced benefits and you'll say, my goodness, why have I not been doing this? Correct. So check it out, supportinglisteners.com. So many goodies await you there. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Let me jump off the air for a second. I just got a notification that the theft device in my car has gone off.
Oh, wow.
I want to make sure that that's 99% chance it's an accident, but this has never happened before. So Sure. Let me go take a look. One second.
While Tom is checking his car, a distraction that we created, we're going through his house. Ooh, a lot of good stuff in there. Okay, we got that. Quick, guys. He's going to come back soon. Make sure you get the jewelry first. Thank you. Okay, Tom will be back. Bye. First podcast with El Verde music. Don't forget, next time around, join the Tom School of Life.
I still have the car.
Good.
I'm sorry about that. That is weird. I got an email. So I have the window open on the of my email and it pops up and just says the theft notification activated. I thought, what? Is this spam? And no.
And don't worry. While you were gone, I recorded nothing inappropriate. So you could just post this as is. Don't even bother to check it. We're friends. You know, just.
All right. Look, let's just keep going. This is the most ridiculous episode I've done. I think, although I don't know, to almost 2,200 of them, there's a list of them. Episode 1990, was it 1990? Yeah. I had a little too much to drink by accident.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.